Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And somewhere back there, hiding in the shadows, is Jeremy.
Jeremy, he is the man with all the power. He's the power behind the throne right now. We're grateful Yay. For it. Yeah, see? Told you. Yep.
And we have no Brett.
No, that's okay. Brett's doing the important stuff. He's being daddy.
Yep. I have just found out about a rather interesting email from Captain Jacqueline and the Scripps team.
Ooh, do share.
It says here, pardon the group email, but I've just got a quick question that Captain Jacqueline wanted me to run by some fans regarding a possible book. I'm pretty sure that y'all are familiar.
The answer is yes. Oh,
sorry. I'm pretty sure that y'all are familiar with how the B5 Books publishing happens. You buy the books or not. There's a possibility that the chronology book might be reissued with a new cover and new layout, but virtually no change in content. This would be made abundantly clear in any notices that would go out, that if a person had previously bought the book, there'd be no necessity to buy it again for any new content unless they really just wanted the new cover and improved layout. The question is this: if the book is reissued in this way, should there be an initial debut discount offered? Feel free to give any reasons why you feel there should or shouldn't be. That is the question.
Well, you know what I think?
Mm-hmm.
I think yes. I think one of the very nice promotional aspects that they've done with the script books have been those discounts. I think, especially dealing with the rabid fan base that tends to be the Babylon 5 fan base, mm-hmm. these people are going to buy it anyway. but it's a nice gesture,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it obviously it's been a working model for them in the past because they've been doing it with everything else. Yeah, my vote is yeah. Having said that, I'm not going to pick up an additional copy because I'm quite pleased with the one I have. You know, I am being cheap. I'm getting a divorce and living, trying to support two different households. But that's a whole other story. That's a whole other mini series in and of itself. Your mileage may vary. No, I think it's interesting that they're choosing to do that. I'm kind of curious as to what's driving that decision.
Since the book was still available, I don't know. Maybe they had to do something with the... I don't know. Maybe they found a better way to do the layout to make it, I don't know, more portable?
Or maybe more...
More conducive to an electronic version. I don't know.
Or maybe the ability to compare the two different chronologies.
Interesting.
Interesting. Now maybe I might be.
and here's the thing: offering the early discount. You know, buy it. What is it, like 10% off, 20% off sometimes?
Right.
Whatever that percentage is, that would. Enable the obsessive completists among us, of which there are many.
right.
And yeah, the completists would say, okay, I'll eventually get the other version just because, but you know, having the discount might make them get it sooner. You never know.
Right. Okay. Well, there you go. That's my take on it. Summer's take.
Yeah. I see no problem with issuing a debut discount on a second edition.
Does it say whether or not this is a limited edition?
Probably not, because the original Chronologies wasn't, you know, limited like the other script books.
Gotcha.
If I remember, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, the Chronologies book, the Quotes book, and one other book were still available from the first series, I believe. Is that right? Or was the Quotes book eventually archived?
I think the Quotes book was eventually archived. I could be wrong. In fact, I probably am, but I do recall that. No, I'll take that back. Never mind. I don't know. We can edit that out, right?
Sure, we can edit that out. Okay. You got anything? Any other news?
Nope. Sure don't.
Alrighty then. We are going to... I truly promise to put up a list of which books are coming up first that we'll be talking about as soon as Tim sends me back my copy of Parliament of Dreams so I can read it.
Yes, I'm reading it. You'll get it. I'm reading it.
You're reading it. Okay, all right. As long as you're making progress, we're good.
Yeah. Should be finished with this weekend, in fact.
Sweet. And then we can discuss that book and then move on to the other books and have some fun talking about the stories. I wish we'd gotten a couple more trilogies, you know? I can gripe about that when the time comes.
Yes.
All right. In that case, we'll take a really quick break and come back to talk about the last of the unproduced Crusade scripts, Little Bugs Have Lesser Bugs, written by Peter Woodward.
I'm Michael R. Menengay.
I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Michael Stackpole.
And I'm Brian Brown.
Join us for an exciting romp through literature and books.
Romp? We're not romping.
We're supposed to be cool.
That's smooth. Right. Okay. It's the cool
smoothing. It's the smoothing sounds.
I don't know, but romp just brings forth images of Michael in tights, and I'm so not going there.
Well, which Michael?
It doesn't matter. Neither one would be very good.
If you would like to join this thing that we do every week, it's called Dragon Page Cover to Cover.
Take two. Welcome to Dragon Page Cover to Cover, where the elite meet to discuss literature.
Okay, let's go back to the tights images. Yeah.
Dragon Page Cover to Cover, where you'll never know what you're going to get next. Bugs.
Bugs. Nothing but bugs. Everywhere bugs. Okay, there's two things to talk about here.
Okay.
One is the script itself, which we should probably tackle first.
Mm-hmm.
And the other I'm going to tease you with is the implications of that story in the overall scheme of what we know of Crusade.
Okay.
So, Summer, why don't you give us a quick recap on the plot?
Of course you are. quick recap on the plot. Little bugs have lesser bugs. Excalibur is in orbit around what we discover to be a dead yet very, very uninterestingly boring planet. And crew morale has suffered. Attitudes have suffered.
Boredom is the order of the day.
Yes. Apparently, when military personnel are bored during their third shift, they watch soap operas.
And not just any soap opera.
I don't even remember the name of it, but it's hilarious. Yeah, it's just the fact, the soap operas. Soap operas, of all things. Couldn't they be watching Doctor Who? Come on, that's,
yeah,
probably,
I know, right?
That's probably the one show we know the BBC will be producing 500 yeah. years from now.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. At that point, their favorite episode will be the 50 Doctors.
There you go.
Yeah. Right, go ahead. Yeah, so they're watching the soap opera, and Galen realizes that there's something else in orbit around this planet, and he basically scares the crew out of their complacency.
But he does it helpfully.
Well, yes. Galen is always helpful.
Intending to help. Intending yes. to help.
Yes.
The object was undetected and was about to slice through the Excalibur when Galen's, shall we say, unconventional
yeah. Methodology.
I'm going to say unconventional flying tactics caused the crew to have to make an emergency course deviation.
Yep.
To get out of his way, thereby getting out of the way of whatever that thing was.
Yes.
And it turns out that thing was a very, 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 very tiny object that resembled a coffin.
Yep.
And in that coffin was a thing.
And what was that thing, Summer?
A creature. A bug. Or something that had bugs.
Yes.
It's actually not very clear what that was.
I thought it was Drock, as I recall.
It was Drock-like, but I didn't get the impression that it was a Drock, you know? Maybe a minion Drock.
A Drockette?
Yes, a Drockette. Either way, it was a dead creature that somehow started spawning fresh parasites. Fresh bugs.
Right.
The kind of bugs you would normally not see unless something was freshly dead. And this poses a conundrum for the doctor. It's like, wait a minute. You've been dead.
Yeah,
where are the bugs coming from? And all the bugs turn out to be the actual problem with what happened on the planet.
Yes. And on the planet, we've got Dorina and Eilerson checking out basically a surface of a world that is, what, a couple feet deep with...
I thought it was a couple hundred feet deep.
That's right. That's right.
A couple hundred feet deep with lots of bugs.
Well, remains of bugs. Yes.
Bug carcasses.
Husks.
I would have loved to have seen how they would have done this.
Yes, me too.
Just like, what are we walking on? Dirt. Nope, not dirt.
Nope, not dirt. And just reading it kind of makes my skin crawl a bit.
You know what it reminds me of?
Mm.
That scene in Return of the King when they're inside the mountain and Legolas tells Gimli not to look down because he doesn't know what the crunching is.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Bones. And literally, as soon as I read that, I'm like, huh. That could have been really cool to see.
But the problem is that it doesn't make sense where all these carcasses are coming from and what is up with that. Eilerson and Dorina are trying to make sense of it. Meanwhile, one of the bugs infects a crew member of Excalibur. And, I don't know, kind of, I hesitate to say it's a possession sort of thing, because it's not quite the same as like we saw in any number of science fiction television shows. But there's some kind of an empathic connection there.
I don't know. Yeah, possession isn't the right word, but forced communication.
Yeah.
What do you call that? What do you call that? We need a sci-fi term for that.
Well, I was about to say exegenesis, because it is kind of similar to that connection that we saw in that episode of B5.
Mm-hmm.
Because what turns out is the bugs start multiplying and moving through the ship, Gideon decides, okay, this is getting out of hand. We just need to exterminate them. And this particular crewman who's in this exogenistic situation manages to communicate the fact that they are intelligent and that they've just been dormant. And so, of course, they, you know, stop the potential murder of these bugs. But what ends up being very interesting about the whole thing is that they did find these bugs inside the corpse, inside this coffin, which was a Drak or Drak-like creature. And so that gives hope to the Excalibur crew that maybe, you know, hey, we've found something that can kill the Drak.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's something that can either be used as a weapon, or at least it's some information as to what we can do to fight them, or and possibly work on the Drak plague.
Yes.
So
I'm trying to find. I'm going back through the page because I literally read it like 20 minutes ago, and now I can't. Okay, yeah. There was a scene where the bugs are trying to make themselves known, and they're as a collective flashing various distress signals in various languages.
Right.
I just thought, I've been like, I've seen this before. Where have I seen this before? And it kind of reminded me a little bit of Bit from the original Tron, but the in a more collective way. Is that, what am I saying? You know, you've got this little thing trying to communicate, only these are lots of little bugs in like a Borg-like collective manner going, yo, dudes, we're, you know.
Yeah. Horton Hears a Who-esque.
Yeah.
We are here, we are here, we are here.
There you go.
Yeah.
The bugs are Whoville, damn it.
It's all a matter of perspective. It's how you choose to look at things.
Oh, you've infected my brain. Thank you.
That's how it goes. That's how it goes. So, overall, what's your take on this episode?
Well, we have to get to the end, which I'm still reading.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I should have pulled Neil in. He's been chomping at the bit to talk about this script forever. Basically, they figure out the bugs are smart. The bugs are intelligent. The bugs are sentient. And the bugs decided to hitch a ride on the only thing that was immune to the virus that was destroying them, which was the Drak itself.
There we go. Yes. And the Drak knew this, and that's why the coffin was as much a warning beacon left behind by the Drak, as I recall. I could recall that incorrectly, but that's how that goes.
But either way, the bugs just want to be left alone. It's like, that's our home now. We'll deal with it. Put us back.
Right, right.
Yep. It's kind of like that. I'm drawing a blank now. No, I read a novel where it was something like that, and I can't remember. I'm literally drawing a blank on it, but it's sort of a little bit, a very, very little bit like the creature, the energy creature that hitched a ride on Sheridan.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Trying to give pictures to represent concepts because it didn't have any other manner in which to communicate.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now,
this particular script, in case people don't know, was discovered by the Jason Davis going through
Babylon 5 archaeologist extraordinaire.
Yes. Yes. He was digging through things, looking for stuff about B5 and Crusade, and stumbled across this forgotten script that Woodward had written. It was written, obviously, in the first year of Crusade. Straczynski liked it enough, but he thought that it fit better in the second year. And hence, that's, well, amongst other reasons why it didn't get produced, but that's why I think it just kind of got shoved away and forgotten about. So this leads to the bigger question. Knowing now what we know about how things would have been transpiring in the first season with Darina's abduction and her somehow coming back with magical swords, getting shot, Matheson possessed by the Apocalypse Box and taking over Excalibur. Boy, everybody in this script seems awfully chummy. It seems to me that if this script were to be produced in the second year, it would. I can't see it being in the first three or four episodes.
Why not?
Because it's There's no tension amongst the crew for all the stuff that went down. You know, there's no noticeable change in the relationship. When Gideon comes on the bridge and catches his crew watching the soap opera, the banter between he and Matheson is the same kind of banter that they've always had. And I'm fine with that. But part of me wants to know. Part of me wants to know how Gideon and Matheson reconciled themselves with Matheson's actions while under the influence of the Apocalypse Box. I'm not saying that it wouldn't have happened and that they could have carried on as before, but part of me is like going, "There's more story here. There's more story that had to happen to get them to this point."
You're forgetting.
It's so frustrating.
You're forgetting the great big pink elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Gideon doesn't have a gaping hole in his chest from a
That's the other part of it. Exactly. I hadn't even gotten that far. Right. Right. Oh, I've just tried to be killed by people likely from my own government. Oh, and we're bored out in deep space.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe he was repaired with nanites.
There you go.
Maybe it was all just a dream.
Hey, that's not entirely impossible. Those nanites that Dr. Chambers adapted to make a shield for the plague, maybe they could have gone in there and fixed him. Or maybe the Apocalypse Box had something to do with it. We don't know. There's a lot of holes.
Yeah, and it probably would have started out with the first episode, getting to be in the shower, right?
Oh. Right.
Well, we did see an episode where he's in the shower. He just also happened to have Elizabeth Lockley in there with him.
Oh, jeez. So, yeah, I don't... It would... Based on what we know happens... Eventually, I can't see them saying, okay, yeah, we're going to do this as season 2, episode 15. I mean, that's a.
Yeah.
But I don't see it as episode 1, 2, or 3 either.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Exactly. I don't see it early on. I could see it as a mid-season sort of show. But. You know, here's the other part of it. I remember when Crusade was first announced, the first coming down the pike, something that Straczynski said, something to the effect of Babylon 5 was the big, huge arc story. He did it. He said that for Crusade, it wasn't going to be as heavy arc, that the arc concept was just going to be another tool in his belt. Now, that could be just, you know, saying that to say it, but... Like I said, with every, you know, there's some other ship floating around out there that's got the firepower of the Excalibur. Like I said, like you said, Gideon's got a hole in his chest. Matheson's linked up with the Apocalypse. There's all this stuff out there, and then the next, the only other script we see for season two is digging around with bugs. That's like, oh wow, what frustration.
Yeah, so we have a whole lot of a whole lot of plot points missing between A and G here. I'm calling this one G.
Yeah, yes, right, exactly. Exactly.
The frustration of not knowing what those plot points might have been.
Yeah.
Irks me. So what do you remember as some of the smaller details, more important details about Little Bugs?
Well, I did like the I really did like the soap opera thing. I thought that was very, very clever. The one little bit of banter that I loved is where Gideon comes on the bridge and he says, "How's it going?" And Matheson says something to the effect of, "Well, Marcia's really tired of John, and John doesn't, you know," he kind of recaps the what's going on with the soap opera. You know, and Gideon rebukes him mildly, and then something else comes around and Gideon makes reference back to the soap opera, and it was pitch perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the writing on that was just, I could hear everybody's voice.
Yep.
You know, doing that, and I really like that.
Yeah, that's the other thing. A lot of the finished scripts that we've read, not the treatments but the scripts, I can hear the characters' voices. I can hear their intonations, their attitude. I can hear Gideon snark in my sleep, which is either good or bad. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, agreed.
Oh, Love Star. Here it is.
Yeah, that's
Love
it. Love Star
is the name of the soap opera. Oh, my goodness. Where did they get that name?
Well, you know, Peter Woodward, he is as much, he's a writer as much as he's an actor. You know, the acting sort of paid the bills. I thought it was one of the more entertaining stories of the unproduced scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that's because he took it to a farther point with the treatment, or if he had being one of the actual cast members, had a different grasp on the characters' voices, I don't know.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say his stage experience probably helped out with that.
Okay.
I think this one would have been a lot of fun had we seen the finished product, because there's some tension, there's definitely some mystery, and there's some humor without going overboard into camp.
Right, right. Exactly. The humor is good without being silly.
I like it. Oh, there was one little final tidbit. After Galen is depossessed,
mm-hmm.
He tells Dorina that he finally understands how she feels about having everything she knew eradicated. Because he got that feeling from the bug he had melded with. Vulcan mind meld with a bug. And I thought that had the potential of creating a very different dynamic between those two.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's an interesting dynamic all the way around with those characters, and I would love to have seen much, much more.
Mm-hmm. And I would have been Well, no, if this was a second season episode, Dorina would have already have had the sword, right?
Yes.
Interesting. Oh, there's so much to go into there. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it gets back to that frustration that we've been having for the last few shows. It's like, much more is there that we want?
It gets more frustrating right now because we have all of these extra pieces.
Yes.
And we are missing a lot of the continuity that would have connected the bite that we had and this literally another half a season's worth of episodes that we do have. The story frameworks that we have for those unproduced episodes, and it just like I've said it before, having this much more to integrate into what we already have for Crusade just brings up many more questions, shines a great big light on, oh my God, this could have been awesome if it had been allowed to to live.
Yes, yes.
All we can do is rage at the heavens.
Yeah, shake a fist. That's all right.
Cry.
In the alternate universe, there is a full 5-year run of Crusade, along with the Harlan Ellison script of iRobot and all the rest.
Cry havoc and let loose the bears of cancellation.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. For anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, TV by the Numbers has a whole thing on the cancellation bear and what series he's going to eat next. Anyway, I think that pretty much does it for Little Bugs Have Lesser Bugs.
I think so too.
Any input, Jeremy?
No, I didn't read it.
That's okay. You're forgiven.
Oh, goodness gracious. Great balls of fire. And as always, you can read this script for yourself if you grab a copy of... I might have misspoke earlier. It's Crusade Other Voices, Volume 1.
Yes.
Not Volume 2. Yeah. It's in Volume 1. The Eilerson poetry, I believe, is in Volume 2.
Volume 2, yes.
Yes.
Which is very intriguing to read.
So go get both of them. Make Captain Jacqueline happy. Join us in our frustration of, my God, there could have been so much more for us to get over.
Yeah, right.
All right, we'll take a really quick break and come right back.
Hi, I'm Kevin Batchelder.
I'm Wendy Hembrock.
And I'm Brent Barron.
And we're the hosts of a new podcast called Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV,
where we discuss sci-fi and genre shows currently on television and some from the past.
We're fans just like you, so join us in our water cooler and back porch discussions of your favorite shows.
And strangely enough, you can find us online at tuningintosci-fi-tv.com.
Be seeing you.
Wait a minute, isn't that what Bester says on Babylon 5?
Maybe. I never watched Babylon 5.
What?
All right, do we have any fan emails to read?
I don't have them. I'm sure we do, but I've been very remiss in my duties, so I'll make sure that next time we will.
All right.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Neil, you got any questions or commentary to add for us, son?
Out there in the chat room.
Yep. He's been supplementing our commentary with page numbers and going.
Good. Yay.
So he's Neil has been operating as our subtitles today.
Yes. Captioning for The Heart of Thinking, provided by Neil Ottenstein.
There you go. We are about ready to dive in, believe it or not, to Babylon Podcast Season 7.
I know.
Seven.
Yep. So what's up next for us? I believe it is Legend of the Rangers.
Yes. So I literally, that one keeps slipping my mind. Yes. That one, I keep forgetting.
I don't think it's that horrible, but we'll have that conversation.
It's not horrible. I just had a viscerally negative reaction to the holographic weapon system.
Okay.
I'm going to say it now. When I first watched that on TNT, I was loving. I was enjoying it. I'm like, okay, it's a little rough in spots, but that's okay. We can get more, you know, this can be worked out.
Yeah.
And then I saw that and I wanted to punch a puppy.
Wow. All right, we'll save that. We'll save that puppy punching emotion for next time.
I was. There's no other way to say it. I was disappointed and enraged all in the same millisecond. I was like, "You've got to be kidding me!" And we can go into more.
Yeah.
About that when we watch Legend of the Rangers, and because I think a Rangers series in place of Crusade could have worked, but I will
yeah I think that would have been a very different beast.
Yeah, it could have had the potential to be more of what TNT was looking for at the time, which was something that wasn't as arcful,
right?
Something that was more episodic,
a little more two-fisted.
Yeah a lot more adventure. And Neil in the chat room is saying, "Summer, lots of people felt the same way." So hopefully we will hear from them. But yeah, next up will be Legend of the Rangers. And then after that, we'll get into the books.
Yep.
Should we do the short stories first and then do the novels?
However you want to slice it, it's fine.
Okay. I promise, come up with a proposed scheduled order of what we're going to cover next, and you guys can chime in on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been a little remiss lately, mostly because I have a lot of websites to update and upgrading them to new versions of WordPress, as well as keeping the content going. Is fun, let me tell you. And yes, our Google Plus page is forlorn. I've been trying to figure out how to engage Hangouts on there, because we can do video on the Hangout. Did you know that?
Yeah, I don't know anything about Google Plus.
I'll tell you about it.
I've been doing Google Plus for a while. We can actually do. They've changed the Hangouts. There's a Hangouts on the air where it would kind of be like the Ustream, but it would be through Google Plus.
Yes. And people in our circles would be notified, and they could like just join in and watch the Hangout and be kind of cool. So I'm curious to see what we can do with some of those. And
I'm more into anti-social media.
That's okay. You'll get over that, tequila or beer. So yeah, if you have any ideas for me to for what other things we can use to decorate the Google Plus page, get it more engaging. I don't think it has commercials like the Ustream does.
That is correct.
So that could be fun too. But yeah, we have a lot more stuff to cover and a few more fun ways to engage with them. So on that note, send in those emails to BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. Come to the website, BabylonPodcast.com. Leave us some comments, not comics. Or if you want to send us comics, you can do that too. Comments on what we have done, what we are doing. Haven't been to the forums lately, but they do exist over at farpointforums.com. And of course, we have a Google Plus page. Click on that Google Plus button on the website. We also have a Twitter, in which case you can find me doing silly Babylon 5 retweets here and there. That's twitter.com/BabylonPodcast. And yes, we will be getting to the comics, probably the comics before the novels. So just for the people who volunteered their services to help us discuss the comics,
we'll be in touch.
Dust them off. We're going to be calling you soon or emailing you soon. And as always, if you want to call in your own voicemail message, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the little voicemails had lesser voicemails.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the crunchy bug carcasses.